Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the In My Fun Employed Era podcast. This podcast is for all my fellow college students, graduates, and anyone experiencing their quarter-life crisis in the modern era. I'm your host, Jalen, recent college grad, LinkedIn victim, and your unemployed friend on a Tuesday. As you can guess from the title of today's episode, we are going to be talking about rejection. While rejection comes in many shapes and forms, I wanted to focus specifically on the type of rejection that arises in the job application process. I've mentioned this in a few previous episodes, but I am no stranger to this type of rejection. I've been rejected from startups, nonprofits, food service jobs, you name it. Usually, I'll never hear back from the jobs I've applied to, or months later, I'll receive the generic AI-generated thank you for your interest in our company email. The idea from this episode stems from a more recent experience I had being rejected that hurt a little bit more than I was used to. To set the scene, this is another job that I had found one day on either LinkedIn or Handshake and mindlessly applied to. Right now, I'm mostly applying for jobs in the UX, UI, and product design industry, and anyone in the same boat knows how competitive it can be to get an entry-level job. Most job postings you find will have been up for maybe 10 minutes and already have 100-plus applications. It can be insane. A few weeks had gone by, and I received an email asking me to complete a design challenge, which I hesitated a bit at first. For those unfamiliar, what a design challenge typically entails is that you're given a business problem or situation and asked to design a solution. This can be through a mobile application, website, or a completely new idea. When I was taking a design class in college, I remember we did an exercise that was to redesign the grocery shopping experience to make it easier and more enjoyable. I remember one of the ideas that my group ended up brainstorming was having little screens on the shopping carts. You could connect your phone to the screen with your shopping list, and it would map out the optimal path for you to take in the store. This was one of the experiences that led me towards product design because the thought of being able to create entirely new solutions or redesign things that have typically been done for decades has always been exciting to me. Before I fall down a rabbit hole, the purpose of a design challenge is to test your ability and your design process under a tight deadline. The reason why I hesitated is that within the design community, there is a huge debate on the ethics of using design challenges in the hiring process. On one hand, design challenges allow you to accurately gauge a designer's design and thought process as they work to solve a design problem. On the other hand, however, design challenges and take-home assignments are often used for free labor in that companies will make the prompt of their design challenge an actual project that they are working on and then build off the ideas that the applicants submit without hiring anyone. There often will be a loose time limit where in the application they say, don't spend more than 1 hour working on this project, but there usually is no way to track that and successful applicants will often spend significantly more time on their projects. I decided to give myself the weekend to decide whether or not I wanted to do the design challenge, and in the end, I decided it would be good practice regardless of how things turned out. Going back to the concern I mentioned earlier, for this challenge, there was an actual time limit to start and submit your designs, so I knew there was a bit more of an even playing field. The prompt itself ended up being one that I knew was unlikely to be an actual project the company was working on, so that also added to my peace of mind. Overall, I had a lot of fun completing the design challenge. The problem resolved around expediting the process of getting meals from the kitchen to employees and finding ways to minimize food waste. I was extremely lucky having worked in the food industry for a few months, so I had a bit of experience to build on. It felt very similar to the grocery store problem in that I was able to come up with the wildest solutions. In hindsight, I think that's one of the reasons why I, spoiler alert, made it past this round, because my solution to the problem was so out there, I'm sure no one had similar ideas. I had the servers wearing headpieces like spies to communicate with the kitchen, iPads where the chefs could use hand tracking to communicate with the rest of the kitchen, etc. I had a lot of fun in the design. I finished the designs, barely managed to upload them on time, and then like the first time, the job slipped into the back of my mind. Around 2 weeks later, I received an email from a recruiter asking if they could schedule a time to call. They were based on the East Coast, so the call ended up being at around 7 a.m. in the morning for me, but that wasn't too big of an issue. I remember thinking that this was the last step in the interview process, given that I had already done a design challenge, so I spent hours preparing responses to the questions I anticipated they would ask. It ended up being a simple get-to-know-you call where the recruiter was just trying to get a feel for me as a candidate, but over-preparing only made the interview go a lot smoother. I remember waiting at 7 a.m. and after around 5 minutes having to ask them if we were still meeting, which was fine, but I should have taken that as a bit of a red flag and a sign to not get too attached to the position. Ultimately, I was told that another hiring manager would reach out to me to schedule a portfolio review where I would meet with a team of designers currently working at the company and had the opportunity to present and answer any questions they had about my design portfolio. A few days pass, I never received the email, so once again I moved on until I received said email and set up the date and time for the interview. In the email, they provided a few links to the company and videos that they recommended I watch to get a better idea before the design review. In hindsight, the amount of time I spent researching and looking into the company was borderline neurotic, but I have a good reason why. Actually, it's not a good reason, but it's a reason nonetheless. The same day I had heard back about scheduling the portfolio review, I had a date scheduled. I'll likely get into this in a future episode, just about the horrid experience that is using dating apps while at home, but that's, again, another story for another time. For my attachment style fanatics, I am fearful, avoidant, or disorganized, which means it takes a lot for me to even reach the point of a first date. However, this time around, I had been pushing myself to go against a lot of my fears around dating, so I was the first one to suggest meeting in person. We picked a place that was halfway in between both of us, which still ended up being around a 20-minute drive for me, but I figured I could get there early, bring my laptop, and continue preparing for the job interview a few hours before we would meet. Long story short, 10 minutes before we were supposed to meet, they unmatched with me on Hinge, and I never heard back. So essentially, I was stood up. Still not fully processing what had just happened, I dove headfirst into preparing for this interview. Even though things had been rough that day, I was excited because a few of my friends and I planned to get brunch and have drinks by the pool that weekend. At that point, I haven't drank in a few months and I needed it now more than ever. That day, before we were supposed to meet, I asked what the plan was because we hadn't fully settled on the time. One of them was surprised that we were meeting the next day and the other did not respond until the afternoon of the day we were supposed to meet. I know it's not fair of me to hold a grudge because they had no idea how much I needed this with everything that was going on. But afterwards, the conversation shifted to everyone talking about their jobs or getting promoted, and it just drove me further into believing that I needed to get this job in order to hang out with my friends again or be viewed as a competent adult. For the following 2 weeks, from around 7 a.m. in the morning till around 11 p.m. at night, I would be preparing for the interview. I had a 23-page Google Doc based on notes from everything I could find about the company, including YouTube interviews, blog posts. If it was on the internet, I read it. I spent hours watching portfolio review tips and designing a slide deck for my presentation. I picked up and read a number of books on similar topics just to make sure that it would all work out. As the days went on, I only became more and more attached to the idea of working this job. I actually ended up making a list in my notes app with all the different ways I believe this job would change my life, and I came up with around 26 reasons. They included, but are not limited to, I would 1. Be able to move away from home and likely to a location where a lot of my friends from college were working. 2. I would no longer be the only person in my friend group without a job. And the dumbest but probably funniest reason is that I would have something to talk about at Thanksgiving when I was inevitably asked what I was up to. Eventually, the day of the portfolio review came. It was a 45-minute interview, again at 7 a.m. because of the time difference, but I'd woken up an hour earlier to prepare, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I remember I dressed in a suit. I removed all distractions from my room, namely my cat, who can sense when I'm on an important call and will start screaming for attention. After getting all that sorted out, I sat down and opened Microsoft Teams. Like the first interview, a few minutes passed where no one had joined the call, so I waited. Eventually, 2 designers joined. We did the general round of introductions, and then the presentation began. I think it went relatively well, given how much I prepared, but I would be lying if I said it was easy. There were a few questions where I scrambled to give an answer, but I still gave the best I could with the information I had. I remember at the end of the interview having a bit of time to ask questions. Being that we started a little bit later than I had prepared, we had maybe 5 minutes to ask questions. I knew that they were both working employees, so I made sure to stop asking questions when the interview was scheduled to end. And when I said this at said time, they quickly said thanks and immediately left the call. Looking back, I should have known at that moment I would not be moving forward in the process. But I was proud of all the work that I had done leading up to the interview and still held on to the hope that things would work out. I hadn't told any of my friends about this job due to being superstitious about them knowing and just based on past experience. I also hate having to relive the sense of failure when a friend asks you about a job you told them about and you have to tell them that you were rejected in the end. The next few days, I would check my email pretty much every hour, waiting to hear back from the job. I kept telling myself how exciting it will be the day it happens and how I would celebrate. I would be kept awake at night just thinking about the different possibilities and would wake up in the morning anxious to check my email. One morning, I remember waking up a little bit earlier than usual because I was going to Trader Joe's with my mom before it got too crowded. I woke up, turned over, grabbed my phone, and opened the email app as I had been doing pretty much for the past 2 weeks, except this time it was there, the email. I wasted no time in opening it up, knowing that this could change everything. The email read, "Dear Jalen, thank you so much for taking the time to discuss job opportunities with us. It was a pleasure to learn more about your skills and accomplishments. However, I'm afraid that after careful consideration, we regret to inform you that we do not have any positions that are a fit for your experience and skills at the time." That was it. I laughed it off, joking that I knew this would happen and continue getting ready for the day. I remember splitting up with my mom in the store so I could pay for the groceries I was getting and I would meet her outside. As I waited for my mom outside, the cashier she had checked out with ran out, stopped her, and handed her a bouquet of flowers. Which felt like a scene out of a sitcom, like, you know, when you're having the worst possible day and your friend finds a $100 bill on the ground. Just that feeling that everything is going perfect for everyone around you while your life falls apart right in front of you. We ended up stopping at another grocery store and I decided to stay in the car while my mom went inside because I didn't need anything, and seconds after she left, it all hit. I started sobbing in the car, pausing occasionally whenever someone would walk by. When my mom came back in the car, I clearly looked as if I was going through something, but again, not wanting anyone to know that I had just failed, I played it off as just being allergic to the flowers she had just gotten. Since then, I've come to terms with things not working out the way I'd hoped. I've tried to look at things from a more positive aspect, being that I picked up a lot of skills in a short period of time preparing for that interview, and that these skills ultimately made me a better designer. Having made it that far in the application process meant that I could definitely do it again in the future. But again, at the end of the day, rejection never gets easier. If you Google how to cope with rejection, one of the first things you will see on any website you click on is to not take it personally, which pisses me off bad because I don't think there's any way not to take it personally. I go more in depth with this idea in my blog, but essentially, so much of our lives today are tied to our career. While I don't think that should be the case, it often is. As an adult, when you are meeting someone for the first time and making small talk, one of the first questions you're usually asked is, "What do you do for a living?" It's the easiest question to get an idea about who a person is and the type of things that they might be interested in. I'd also argue that it makes it easier for us to categorize them in our heads. Again, this is the psych major in me jumping out, but as humans, we have a tendency to categorize and organize information, especially when it is unfamiliar to us. Finding out what job someone has allows us to easily categorize them with other people we know with similar titles or with our idea of that job. That way, the way we talk to someone and view someone who has just revealed to us that they are a doctor is a lot different than how we would interact with someone who might be unemployed. Ethically, it is a bit of a slippery slope, but at a fundamental level, we all do it. Our brains have evolved to make quick assumptions in order to survive. In today's society, a job can be an easy way to sum up a person's life. That being said, when you face rejection applying for a job, especially having invested so much time and energy into the process, it can be hard not to take things personally. Your skills, interests, and background are being evaluated, and not getting a desired outcome can cause you to doubt yourself and your worth. To end on a hopefully more positive note, I wanted to end this episode with a few ways that I've coped with the string of recent rejections I faced. I tried to steer clear of the generic advice you'll find online, and while some of them are the same, I wanted to offer the specific ways that this advice has helped me and go beyond the typical surface level explanation you'll find. First, and again, the most annoying advice you'll probably hear is to not take things personally. I know I just ended a rant on why I don't think that's possible, but I do think it is important to at least try to reframe the situation in a positive light. For example, in a Psychology Today article I'll link below, they discuss something called the mustard effect, in which qualified candidates will often not get the job for reasons completely unrelated. It's called The Mustard Effect because there's a story about a candidate who was perfect for a job getting rejected because the person who was interviewing them spilled mustard on themselves and could only focus on that the entire interview. Oftentimes, the true reason you don't get a job has nothing to do with your skills, but when we don't have a clear answer, we immediately assume the worst and take things personally. To help myself get over the sting of rejection, and somewhat fueled by spite, I ended up emailing the hiring manager, thanking them for the opportunity, and then asking them if there's anything specifically they felt I was lacking in so that I could work on it in the future. I was told that they couldn't share this information with candidates, which makes perfect sense because of legal reasons, but it also just shows how it is often not the reason you think. Going off that, when faced with rejection, it can be easy for us to get into our heads, to think that it is the end of the world and all that we have going for us, but taking a step back and realizing that there is so much more to life than the jobs you're applying to can help alleviate the string of rejection. The day I received the rejection email, after getting back home, I immediately went to the library. One of my recent coping mechanisms when I'm going through a rough time is to pick up a cozy or feel-good book that I can use to distract myself from my current situation. I've been really into a lot of Japanese fiction books that for some reason over half have to do with either cats or bookshops. If you know, you know. This time I picked up a copy of We'll Prescribe You a Cat, which is about a hidden clinic where people will come with their problems, and instead of receiving a typical diagnosis or treatment, they are given a cat, much to their surprise or anger. Other favorites I've read and would recommend would be the Before the Coffee Gets Cold series and the Days at the Morisaki Bookstore series. If you're interested in other recommendations, please let me know. I love talking about books, but these books specifically have a special way of putting things back into perspective, and a lot of times will scarily touch on the very topic I'm dealing with in life. Giving yourself a break and the ability to realize that there is so much more that defines you as a human being than just your job, and giving yourself small wins every day can help you bounce back on your feet a lot quicker as well. Drawing on this idea, another way to put things into perspective is to spend time in nature. This is another cliche you'll hear online, whether being told to touch grass or have your eat, pray, and love moment, but I think it is also one that benefits us in more ways than we often give credit to. When I was still in school, as part of a club I was in, we went on a retreat where we spent a night camping in the woods. Aside from the fact that there's nothing more humbling than sleeping on the ground in a tent, I remember waking up one morning a bit earlier than everyone else because, again, we were sleeping on the ground. I ended up going a bit into the forest just by myself to journal. I remember writing about the different things that were on my mind and bothering me, and over time realizing how little of each of these problems seemed in the grand scheme of life. While the problems I were facing felt like the end of the world at the time, regardless of how I felt about them or whether or not they would be solved in the future, life around me would continue to progress. Trees would continue to grow, the birds would continue to build nests, the cycle of life and death would continue. Mother Nature does not care if you have an impressive resume or a six-figure salary. Life moves on. This experience was a great reminder also of the idea that nothing matters. Before you interpret this as a cry for help, I am fine. I can't be the only person who has seen that one meme format where it's the two people sitting inside the bus on opposite sides. One person is looking out a window into like darkness and like they're sad, and the other person is smiling looking out of another window that's like a sunny day. I remember seeing a post in that format that was funnily enough said nothing matters on both sides, which just illustrates the duality of the phrase. For example, on one hand, you can view nothing matters as there's no reason for me to try because, again, nothing matters. But on the other hand, because nothing matters, you shouldn't take things so seriously, both the good and the bad. I just finished reading another book recommendation, Share Your Work by Austin Kleon, which is unrelated to the topic, but a section of the book tells the reader to read obituaries every morning because nothing motivates you more than being faced with your own death. When looking at the bigger picture and thinking about how everyone is going to die one day, rejection suddenly feels so small and insignificant. I at least was quickly snapped out of my cycle of self-pity. Why am I spending time dwelling on this one setback when this is all just a small point in my life? I say this all generally because it is a lot easier to preach being on the other side, but when you are immediately faced with rejection and the wound is fresh, it can feel like the end of the world. Take all the time you need to process what is going on, but don't let it keep you from all the opportunities you have lying ahead of you. Facing rejection is never easy and it can feel as if things will never work out, but I like to believe that somewhere in the future, there exists a version of myself who is looking back at this very moment, laughing about how anxious I was. They'll thank me for not giving up and continuing to face each new day, despite how exhausting it can be, and I'd hate to let them down. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the In My Fun Employed Era podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts on similar experiences, so feel free to email me at funemployedera@gmail.com or comment on my blog linked in the description. Make sure to share this podcast with your unemployed friend on a Tuesday. I'm rooting for you. We're all in this together, and I'll see you next time. Cheers.